I'd like to begin. Maureen has just left and she's bringing a guitar. I wanted Maureen to do this because she's leaving the village soon. On the way, when we rode together on the boat, I found that Maureen isn't here, and I'll say this, and I think it'll add meaning to it. I'm not talking behind her back. I'm telling you something that I think makes it all the more important. Maureen's father passed away in December, and Maureen's mother told me how meaningful a life they lived from September until December, and especially of the growing of his faith. And then about an hour later, it dawned on, well, somehow she found out who I was and said that a book that was especially, in fact, very meaningful to him was In the Rustling Grass. Now, I find that hard to believe, and he found it very significant, and so Maureen is getting her guitar, and she is going to play background music while I read one of the verses, probably from it or from another book that he also liked, In Due Season. And the juxtaposition of the song that she wants to play and the poem that I choose at random is the chance that we take. And that's part of the excitement of the third dimension or fourth or fifth dimension of creativity, is that you don't have to plan it ahead and follow the bulletin exactly. You take the risk in fellowship and in trust and see what happens. And that's, it isn't always something that you publish. It isn't always something that you even defend. It isn't something you try to explain. It isn't something that you try to repeat. It isn't something that I say, now you go out and do the same thing. That embarrasses me when I give the impression that someone should now go out and try it, because I don't even know what that means. I wouldn't want to try it the second time myself, because if I did, it gets to be like in a rut. And I think that so often our life gets to be like walking that rut, that the way gets so deep that finally we can only see the top of each other's heads. And that is a very low road. And I prefer to not walk in that low road and the same old route over and over and until you can't even see each other's eyes. There are a lot of things that are important, and the tone of the room, the atmosphere, the climate, to me is just as important as the word, or as important as the words that are said. And what you see and what I see, what you hear and what I hear, I know won't be the same. So I'm not trying to arrive at any conclusions. I'm not trying to arrive at a doctrinal statement that we're going to memorize now. I'm not arriving at anything after which we put a period and say, this is it. I would rather arrive at something that seems to be just the first phrase of a sentence and three dots after it, and that means, I think we got a beginning. Most of the time, when I sign or write into a book, sign my name or write in, I put in three dots. Sometimes that's all I do, especially with people who know me, because I'm that ambivalent kind of person. Sometimes it's called open-ended, sometimes it's called confused. It's gotten all kinds of names. Not being able to make up your mind, and that's why you say both things and get it all mixed up, and it's neither chronological nor sequential. It may be cyclical, but who can defend that or describe it? I prefer not to talk like paragraphs. I wouldn't know how. And I don't really think like paragraphs, because I think, for me, paragraphs are demonic. I mean, they hurt me when I have to behave like a paragraph. I don't even like to behave like a sentence. I prefer to behave like sort of as the thing happens, or what comes to mind. And the things that come to mind aren't always full sentences for which a teacher would give me an A. And that's why I find grading very difficult, as some of you here know. Probably because I don't like to be graded either. I'm very sensitive about that, but I'm sure I'll be graded in the next 4 weeks. We all are graded, up and down graded. The other day in Los Angeles, we had such great things happening in a youth convention, and the creativity was coming so beautifully out of the group that it got to have the feeling, can you top this? So then we said, can you bottom this? And then we got some brand new courage, and we had all kinds of failures coming through that were just as great as the heights. So, and I'm hoping in these days together that we won't try to top each other, and I hope I don't try to top myself. My wife, a good critic, said, why don't you let more of the creativity come from the group, because they're probably more able, that's not quite what she said, but what she meant, than you are. So I hope to be an enabler. I will be the manure. Now Willie could have said that in the four-letter word. And that's why Willie laughs so hard. Willie doesn't clean up his paragraphs and sentences as well as I do. And that's why Willie doesn't talk on subjects like creativity. He's always got something else, and he's in a forum. Oh, Willie, you got me off the subject. What was the subject? I'd just like to have you imagine that a photographer came in now and told you to hold the position in which you are, and I wish you would do that and hold your position, that is, what do you see now? Think of the colors of it. Think of where you have last seen something like it. If you could take a magic marker, which is in now, and write a word across it to title it, what would you write? If you were to look at it and think of it as a parable, and use it as an idiom to describe something that had real significance to you, what interpretation would you give it? If you were to translate it now into something else. Just two more questions. What is its mood? That which you are looking at, what is the mood of it? And if you could take it from where it is and place it any significant place in the village, where would you put it? That's a tough one, I'm sure, for some of you. Well, just while we're here too, what do you hear? Think of everything you hear. Thank you. I sat in a motel in Los Angeles where the windows were so high you couldn't look out, and for 2.5 hours I wrote everything I heard. You don't get the most kicks out of something like that, but if you want to try something new, you're bored with a lot of the other things you've done, it's, you know, it's quite an experience. And I can't tell you how many pages and pages and pages of things I heard as I sat there and couldn't see, but I could hear. And to open the ears and to open the eyes and to open the nostrils and to get the mix and to alternate these. For instance, when I write a poem or a story or an anthem, I move around the body and try to touch the senses so that it doesn't just come out like you've got big ears, or this one singing it looks like he's got only one big eyeball. But somehow to be open to the whole person, and the same would be true also in terms of the events and the context of that person. That takes discipline. Now, it means in a way that you do it one thing at a time, and then faster and faster and faster until you no longer keep track of it. But it does happen. But I find necessary to do it in slow motion sometimes, because there are some parts of the body that through the years I have not thought possible to be in hymns and anthems. And I want to get them in there too. Well, let's say something about this. This, okay? Yeah. And whatever, not paragraphs now. We can have a paragraph perhaps later, but right now, single sentences, words. What do you see? And don't wait to hold up your hand and be recognized. Just let's play with the wood. We'll see tonight, if you see the film Creativity, Why Man Creates, one of the things that we will see and hear is that creativity is playing around. Okay? What do you see?
Piece of pie.
Laughing is okay. That affirms. Creativity likes a community that affirms one another. And laughing tonight will be interpreted as affirmation. Okay? Okay?
Light and shadow.
Side of a mountain.
Vertical thrust.
What?
Vertical thrust.
Dirt down in the corner.
A tree.
Roughness. Wrinkles. Brown.
Yeah. Warm.
Life and death. Think of a city.
Telephone poles.
Buildings. Toothpicks.
Yeah.
paper.
A law.
Tradition.
Pencils.
Creatures.
Skateboard.
I'm back here, thanks.
Thanks, kids.
Barbecue. Sauna.
Let's say mood words. Mood.
Quiet. Quiet.
Cozy.
Tower.
Desolation. Security.
Lonely. Fear.
Despair. Happiness.
Think of family.
Necessity.
Steps.
Cutting board.
Door post.
Levers, needles, and seats.
Fireplace.
Blackboard.
Treehouse.
Head of the house. Okay. Yeah, this can, it can, it gets to be kind of a Dr. Seuss thing too. And I guess in part this is this is like Monday in the pastor's study when he meditates. I always wondered what my father did on Mondays, and I think this is what he did. He just took time to think things through and to make relationships and connections and interpretations and parallel ideas and contrasting ideas, and he called it getting ready for next Sunday sermon. Now, that was old-fashioned to do that already on Monday, but that goes back a ways, and in Nebraska they didn't know any better.
I don't know who knows exactly what creativity is, and this time that I have today has a little bit to do with creativity. But if this, what we have been doing, is some aspect of the creative act, could we make a mental list of what constitutes, what are some of the principles, what are some of the things persons do who do act and write and speak, etc., creatively? What are the principles? We can do it from experience now and make a list or a circle of items. What are they?
Like imagine?
Yes, that's one.
See what just exists.
Yes.
Rearrange.
Feel. Talk off the top of your head.
Emphasize.
Yes.
Associate.
Bounce.
Dissociate.
Reject. Yeah, sort out. Mm-hmm.
Pretend.
Dream.
Keep going. Look.
See. Sensitize.
Project.
Perceive.
Fool around. Risk.
Yeah.
Some of you sure took a risk. Dare. I hope it doesn't get back home what you said. Sitting here looking at a block of wood. Going all the way to Olden to look at a block of wood and say what you did. In the film tonight, I think it says something about wanting to keep alive the idea of resurrection, an anti-death motif, wanting still to say another thing, that isn't all, there's still more and more and more. I still haven't said it all. I haven't seen it all. I haven't felt it all. There must be more. If this were ashes, we could go on. And if the ashes were in the earth, you could go on. And, you know, and the ashes feeding in the sea. So now this thing can be all the way translated back into the earth and into the ashes, into the brand new tree. And you can go through, you know, tree after tree after tree from here, because the desire not to quit. Maybe that's not, you know, okay. But for me, creativity is that kind of open-ended style of wanting to keep going. And it requires really fellowship and community, because you can't keep that going alone. And a creative community, a creative person often, I guess, is moving, you know, out of loneliness into fellowship and finding others who supplement, complement, and incarnate and enter the incarnate act of duplicating, conceiving, birthing, rebirthing, bringing up, going to the burial together, and standing at the open grave together, etc., etc. Whatever imagery, you know, you follow. It's a very interesting way to rehearse the entire small catechism when you're bored with having gone through it the way you have, and maybe you're not boring, than to go through the whole thing and color code it without opening the book. Kids love it. Or instrument it so that an article or a line gets to be an oboe or a cello or whatever, and then stop and say, why? And then you've opened the deluge. These are, I don't smoke a pipe, or I don't have some other things by which I can somehow, I guess, move on. And for me, the items become these ways. I'd like to have four people do a picture. Now, we have talked about, I could ask you to, who would like to be that? Well, you know, if you wanted to be a block of wood, that may be too easy. So I'll pick another one. And this is, most of us are over four, so it's very difficult for some people. By the age of four, Sylvia Ashton Warner says that in the book Teacher, we have already
quit tearing paper, we have quit getting our hands too dirty, and we have begun to clean up and put things, straighten things up and be tidy. And now we'll have one more crack at it, if possible, when we're adolescents, I suppose. That's one more, maybe one more crack at getting back through the cycle, I think it is. I don't know, maybe that's why those two ages attract me a great deal, age 3 and 16. I don't believe I'm 44. I have a picture here that some of us can see, and those of us who can see it, I would like for us to do it. And maybe if you could, you can leave your chair if you want to, or you can stay in your chair if you want to. But I want you to only look at the picture and then do that picture, be that picture. Assume the attitude of it, the lines of it, the motion of it, the mood of it. And how many of you can see it? Okay? There are about 3 or 4. Go ahead. Just keep the position. Think the position. I'd like to have you think of a sound that is like the feeling you have. Think of a sound. And now say that sound out loud. Say it again. Say that sound for about 1 minute while I read. Mary's heart fell, and her spirit drooped like a plant in early frost. Old Simeon said that her heart would be pierced as with a sharp sword, and she knew it. Her spirit was to be prepared for another temple visit when he would be 12, and she would hold his strange sayings in her heart. And when he was 30 at a wedding in Cana, he would be more than son. Her spirit was prepared for when he was but 33, she would go to Jerusalem to carry spices to his grave. Now, in case your choir isn't doing well some Sunday, oh, I'm sorry, I meant to show the picture. That's like an early frost when the vine had about 5 weeks to go and it got caught by an early frost. That's not a very good feeling. Well, Howard Hong said today, and he's right, that plants don't have feelings. But I'm not talking about plants. I had never thought of a new kind of choir, but I think that the worship and music commissions of our churches should be informed that there are potential new forms of moaning and groaning choirs, and maybe we could affirm some of the monotones in the church again.
Some of the college choirs, like in Minneapolis, some of the new, there's really very little words in it, and very little in the way of traditional music. And I've been looking around and wondering what a person would do. Something like this actually would be shocking, but it could be so far more effective than some of the things to which we have been so useful, so accustomed.
I think this whole 4 weeks is going to be a laugh. And I think it's the only way really to get through some of the seriousness that we, you're right, that we have about this whole business. And wouldn't it be something too if the choir could accompany the sermon with mood music, mood tones?
Instant feedback.
Yeah.
Reflecting whose mood?
Yes. Now, one of the things that someone back here, somebody said, I don't know, selecting or giving priority. When one has these creative jags like this, you do have to give priority and not write everything that comes to mind or say everything you think. But I think here that we can say a little bit more than we would write and perhaps a lot more than we would say, maybe not. We're fooling around a little. I hope no one just thinks that we are really going to do everything that... Some people don't know whether we're kidding or not, and maybe we're not. Maybe some things can't be determined by some of the forms and the commissions and the committees and some of the institutionalized patterns that we have. Maybe there are brand new creative forms by which we can get at old problems quickly, and we don't need to run long tests on them to see where the church is and can be. We'll do another one. I have a wedding. I have a wedding service here, a celebration, and I'm not going to say anything about it, except to if you have yours with you, if you brought yours to Holden Village, would you bring it tomorrow or whenever we're on next? If you brought the service for your ordination with you to Holden, would you bring it? Or when you became president of the women's group, would you bring that one? In other words, I would like for us sometime to look at some of the celebrations that we have in the church and perhaps discover some other and some more creative forms by which we could, you know, do them. Ellis's restaurant, I'll never forget that motorcycle coming down the aisle. Do you remember that? that was really a quick rehabilitation program. Dr. Frost, St. Paul Seminary, Luther Seminary, says, I think we need a lot more burial services where we bury some old traditions and customs, and we might think of some of those in the next couple of weeks. What are some things we may want to get rid of, and how could we exercise them? I don't mean exercise them. So I hope we can be play around a lot with some very holy things. And if we're supportive enough, I suppose it won't be too heretical. I would like to read from In Due Season. While Maureen plays a song. Maureen does not know what I'm going to read, and I'm not quite sure yet either. It's a toss-up between two, and I don't know how you toss up. You start playing, Maureen, and I'll just... Oh, you really fouled me up now. She's going to switch songs on me. I don't mind taking the risk, but when you add to my risk. All right. Fine. The faithful are fearless. Jesus counseled a few, and he said, "Be not afraid. I will send a comforter." And so they kept their heads and their hearts high, and they were continually open before the Lord. The cities and the country were covered with sheer unbelief, but the followers were like an oasis in the midst of barren doubt. Their story was yet in jeopardy, under continual attack, and their life was in danger of storm and violence, but they did not change their stance. Their peace ridiculously passed all understanding. Some once waited for his birth. Some waited for his resurrection, and some wait for his return. The faithful are few in frigid times. They're not yet more than a militant minority. I'd like to have you play the other one too. I think it's in here. Okay. Yes. Shying away from it. I'm losing my nerve. I feel like a preacher who gets up there and says, the audience, you know, the congregation doesn't look like it's ready for what I've got to say. So I have an option. I've got 20 others that I could turn to. Keep going, you're doing beautifully. You're not in trouble, I am. So I've got a mood and I'm following it. It's not very logical. Because if I had this thing printed in a bulletin, I'd know exactly what page to go to. And so I'm looking. This is much better than where I was. You ever talk to yourself? I recommend it. I do, I recommend that you do. Hurrah, hurrah, all things are made new. The corruptible becomes incorruptible. The mortal becomes immortal. Redemption is very near. It is here. Here come the motorcycles. I should have had that line in. I forgot it. It is a new day. The former things have passed away. The ministers and the old ladies have deconsecrated the church. I forgot to say that in creativity, you also face failure. You depend on it, and then what happens is that you operate out of your weakness. In fact, that's I'm glad that happened. I'm glad that came to me tonight, because that's kind of what it's all about. I believe sincerely that creativity is not operating with your strength, but it's operating very much out of your weakness and with your, quote, handicap, with the thing, you know, that your mother did wrong when you were a kid. And you, you know, since you can't, she's not around, you can't blame her. The best you can do is to make the most of it, and if possible, make money off of it. it becomes your way, your style of life. You can fight it and say it's not true. Then you get poorer and poorer. But you can go with it, and if you get enough friends and a loving family who forgive you and know this is who you are, and would miss you if, you know, if you change too much, it gets to be a style. In other words, to find your style and to live in his forgiveness, and to operate out of the forgiveness of sin. I believe this sincerely. I don't believe. Well, Herb, you know, you got a real gift there, boy. You can really do it. Do what, man? What I think I do is not what I read there. That's operating out of my identification and relationship to others. It's working through forgiveness. It's working through feelings of being a nothing or having been a somebody. Recapping an event. I'll give a story. I'll tell a bigger part of, not the best, but a bigger part of the story later in the week or the month. I took a piece of wood from Minnesota River to Los Angeles. Now, when I travel heavy. And when I come, they usually come meet me with a truck. I brought this, and when I unpack, people marvel. I had this wood, which I took to the group of 600. I had two pieces of wood. I won't tell you about the large piece, but I'll tell you about the small piece. It was Japanese wood. Not far from our house is the Minnesota River. And 6 miles from our house, just on the other side of the Minnesota River, underneath all of the trees and in between all of the mosquitoes at this time of the year, my family and I found quite a few foundations of houses. No wood anymore, just the foundation. And growing right out of the dining room and the kitchen were trees, like so big and round. Now that is a fantastic scene to see trees growing. I'd give anything for a tree that would grow right out of my living room, except that there were no walls. Well, this was a surprise to us. Most of the people in the community had never heard of it. We lived just a few miles from it for 10 years now, and we know our community. And then my children heard in school that this is where some Japanese had been interned during the war, and they had been hid there in the Minnesota Valley. This is where they lived. So I took some, and then I found some priceless wood. You can't even get it in the lumber yard. It is the wood that was the walls of these homes, all bulldozed, and I dug into it, piled it on top of our car, and went home like hippies or something, you know. I don't know what they thought. I had to drive very slowly, cars honking, because I was hauling home this wood that I couldn't buy in a lumber yard, Japanese wood. So I took a piece of this Japanese wood, two pieces with me, and when we left the arena, one girl said to me, "I want to thank you for the weekend, because what I've heard so much is, and what I've been affirmed in, is the resurrection. And my two-year-old brother, we buried him a week ago yesterday, and tomorrow is his second birthday." And I was glad I had this extra piece of Japanese wood, because I knew that she and I had some more talking to do, and we had to stay connected. And there's nothing that'll keep you connected like a piece of Japanese wood. Now, maybe you don't know that, but that's because you don't live near the Minnesota River. So I gave her this piece of Japanese wood and said to her that she had heard the story in the arena. And she said, "Oh, I'll tell you in the morning." what it means. That night, after communion service, which was a holden communion type of service, and there are all kinds of holden communion services, but this was something, she came up and she said, I want to tell you, and she told me a long story about her brother and her faith and her trust, and it was beautiful. The next morning, I called her up because she wanted to, but she wanted me to tell the story. And I told the group the story of her faith, and this was her brother's birthday, his second birthday, and they affirmed her, they applauded her, and she took that piece of wood home, and she said what she was going to do was she was going to put that piece of wood in the middle of a wall, and she was going to take the next 10 years of her life, or however long, and she was going to keep writing around it, thinking around it, she would be happy around it, and she was happy that day. I mean, she was happy on that Sunday morning, and she called it Easter, and she was going to decorate and to that whole wall. And then we talked about, I wish I understood, what is the wailing wall? But we talked about what Sylvia Ashton Warner calls an exhaling wall, a wall against which you can somehow stand and just, you know, and feel out. And feel out theologically, cry out her questions, and throw them out on the wall in any form or shape that she would want. So she has a wailing wall, which is a hailing wall. What is the wailing wall? Maybe it hasn't anything to do with what I've just said.
It's where the Jews pray before the return of the Israel to it, and they prayed for years since the fall of 70 A.D. for the return of the temple to them. They wail, it's lost. And they pray there for the return.
Is a hope? It has a sense of a hoping.
Oh, yes, hoping. Pretty much. Hope of the Messiah coming.
You never know everything, do you? I didn't know that. I didn't know. I was hoping it was a hoping wall. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's why the three dots. You're never done. You don't know at all. And when you're guessing, that's not bad. Then look around and inquire. Maybe someone else has got some information to keep you guessing some more. I have some photos here that I would like to give to people. And then I have some writing paper here. It was hard to find writing paper around here. Are you from Nebraska? You're not offended by what I'm doing. I just thought of something. You're from Seward? This is probably no compliment to you, but now I remember why I told you that they talked about you. There are so many other kids who had been with you said that so many of the things that we were doing reminded them of the kind of stimulation they had in your class. So you may want to hit me afterwards for that, but I wondered why your name was on now all of a sudden it dawned on me. Here's paper, here's photos. Now, a bit of discipline. You think that, you know, some people think that creativity is just has no discipline at all. You can go any direction you want to. No. No, it has a discipline. If you take a picture, I would like it back tomorrow. That's a discipline. just like an overnight. And the second discipline is, if you can't get going, get someone else to help you get going, like a wife, a girlfriend, or somebody like that, or a boyfriend. Get going on writing to the picture. Oh. Yeah, and anything that'll facilitate writing the picture. Yes, sir. And what I would like to have you do is to think of the picture as of opening up a parabolic, being a parabolic picture. For instance, here's a fellow who might be... Who might he be in the scripture? And I would like to keep this biblical, that is from Genesis to Revelation. If there's anything other than that that's biblical, I don't want you to even bother. But I do would like to keep it within the 66 books of the Bible. Who could this be? This could be beautiful. That's your John the Baptist. And kind of right underneath it, like phrases, prayers, stanzas, verses, anything. But just kind of let go. Because so many of you can do it so much better than I. I'm no longer threatened by that because I've gotten the books published. I don't worry about that. Now it's your turn. So I'm not threatened by your being better. Most of my students pass me. And then I quit and I get others. But yeah, I don't stay with guys very long. And when they come back the second time for class, I don't really like it because they're already past me and they've heard my line. So that's what I would like to have you do. And if you want one, come up. There are about 10. Okay. I want to read a closing, and then we go. You have questions, I'm sure, but I didn't ask many. But I think we did some things that opened up inquiry. In other words, you say, I wonder, and you got a lot of questions, and creativity really is an inquiring spirit. It's the interrogative mood. It's not always a declarative and not always an imperative mood. It's a very inquiring spirit. It's a doubting spirit, too. And if you ever do that, you're good material for creativity. Now, last year, this is in the book Breakout. Last year, and it's already in this book, it just got in under the wire. There was a girl here who had a beautiful story. And Norm Hobble and I had these little poem reading sessions. And she had her story was better than anything that I had. And I thought anything better than he had, although they didn't tell him that. And so I asked her if she would bring it. And she brought it. She dug it out of a box where a lot of things are hidden. And there are all kinds of boxes. So she brought it to the village center. And the blue lights were on and the people were staying after Vespers for a little while. And I'll tell you, she was the one who got the applause. Well, we got it too, but you know, but she really got it. And I wrote about it this way. She needed a question. And I think that if, you know, this is kind of what I hope to do. I'm going to work on it. I didn't do that well tonight, but I'm going to do better as to really get your response. It was a village in the Cascades, a creative community, they said. He was old, that's me. She was new. She needed a beginning and someone to ask a new question. That's fun to ask a new question. I give you a new question. Can you imagine how it would be never to have seen a tree? Tell me tomorrow about that one. Oh yeah, now, her poem was in a box. None had heard it. And then someone found it. She sang and they applauded all in the same day. Okay, now comes a little dialogic. She had it in a book, a scrapbook, buried in the middle, buried in one of the pages, in an envelope. The people had not seen it, not ever. Well, she had not written it that way. It was, well, you know, scrawling, imperfect, corrections needed. It was in her head for many days, perhaps years, she didn't know. And now it was in the book, the spiral book. And it was under the thing, stored there. You know, you got something under things stored there? She kept it there, under them all. But he asked her, do you write? She'd waited longer than the poem for this question. Do you write? And he asked her how she felt when she wrote, and what kind of pen and pencil she liked, and what side of the page, and if there were any margins, and why. They had never asked her so much and such foolish questions. And if there were any pictures with it. And so there wasn't anything to do but show him and let him read it. And say whatever he would and take the chance that of what he thought. She said she would leave while he read. It was good. Editors say that's good. he asked her to stay. He took the chance of her being present when he read it. And he laughed at the happy days of the Walter Wumpel in the poem. And he liked every letter and every line. Plus the line that she wrote on the carbon copy to him. And the line read, "Hey, let's never grow up." And then she sang a song in the story about a balloon lady, blind, holding balloons. And he asked her to read to the many people that night, the whole village, and to sing the song with him and with all the other writers. And the line that everyone liked best that night was the one about the balloon lady, quote, "I sell color and happiness tied with a string." Nathaniel, where would you go to find one like that? He led the people in applause, and he still goes on writing. She has begun, and he keeps asking, "Who writes? What do you hear? What do you see? What do you feel? Lord, there are so many private poems, so many silent stories waiting to be sung, waiting for a first reading. Lord, in our midst, bring them out into the light of day. Amen." If you take a picture, you must bring it back. Promise?